ladies, that was really insightful. It's great to see everyone this morning. And thank you for submitting your raffle feedback cards. They're here in this bowl, and it's time to give away our great prizes. So if I do call your name, then come up and get your prize. So the winner of the Kendra Scott Davies 18 carat gold Vermeil Pave pendant necklace in white diamond is... Difficult handwriting to read. Tess Sprackman, is it?
Tess.
Tess has won the Kendra Scott necklace. We'll be sure to post it to her if she's not here. And then the winner of the J. McLaughlin cashmere wrap and $350 gift card for a private styling appointment is... Again, I'm not very good with handwriting. Karen De Gilbert?
Yes, she has
the feed. Oh no, so neither people are here. Well, we'll be sure to post them. Thank you everyone for entering. Next up, we have a fantastic panel of women ready to discuss what it takes to become an effective negotiator. So it's my pleasure to introduce Moira Conlon, President of Financial Profiles. Welcome, Moira.
Development efforts. Clear Lake Capital is a private equity firm. We have $7 billion of assets under management. We're investing out of two pockets of capital. We have our buyout fund, which is a $14 billion fund, and we have a non-control pocket, which is $2.5 billion. We're very sector-focused. We invest across technology, industrials, and consumer. I would say that negotiation for me has been something that I use on a day-to-day basis since I've been in the finance industry for almost 20 years. I would say just giving some clear examples, I do it for deal negotiations, deal structuring, getting exclusivity, even thinking about how do we exit strategies. But then in personal life, I have to fight with my fiance to take out the trash or do the laundry. So it's always a negotiation on everything in the house. So I think we do it and we use it every day.
Hi, I'm Eileen Mansara, Managing Director of Post Advisory Group, in charge of business development and marketing. We're a $16 billion sub-investment grade credit shop just here in LA. I externally negotiate every day with our limited partners around fees and side letters. I internally negotiate around product development, my own comp, as we were just listening to that story. And like you, I think my highest negotiations with my twin 7-year-old boys around screen time and what we're having for dinner, and they're probably the hardest negotiators I face on a daily basis. But as Maura pointed out to this question, I think we all negotiate 100 times a day, whether we're aware of it or not, and we're always honing our skills. And I'm going to give one small story. Scotty and I met when our two firms were suing the hell out of each other. No joke. And Women's Credit, we got past all of that, Mishigosh. It got done, and we've become really good friends. So just showing you, you can get a win-win and not actually fight to the death in a negotiation.
Yes, that is the best fun fact. It's not a problem.
Scotty Wardell, I'm a partner at Apollo. I sit within our hybrid value fund, which is within the equity side of the business at Apollo. We're basically a non-control, preferred equity-oriented strategy. I oversee our software and tech vertical for North America. So, I think they have covered very well, but literally any time throughout the day you're walking through and having a conversation about wanting something, you're in a negotiation. So, it happens many, many times a day. And, I probably can't go into all the details of that particular negotiating story, but I can tell you it was very, very nuanced. And so it's an important skill to develop personally and professionally.
Great. And last but not least, Maura Conlon. I'm the president of Financial Profiles, and we're a strategic communications firm that does a lot of work in the financial services and asset management space. And I've been negotiating as a person that started a firm to get our inaugural clients, and ever for the past 15 years, ever since then. So we had a lot of sort of hands-on negotiating there, and we also help clients a lot with media engagement, and that's a very interesting form of negotiation, if you will, right? Because you're sort of, it's not normal conversation, and neither are any of these negotiations, right? You're often in the lines of work that we're all in a spot where you have an agenda, the person on the other side of the table has another agenda, and you're really navigating the conversation. So before we get going on the questions, I had a couple of slides here I just wanted to share with you all. This first one I thought was interesting. I found it in a story in Entrepreneur Magazine, and it's the definition, forgive me, of negotiating, okay? And this is interesting because it might be different than what you think about it, okay? So it comes from the Latin, and I wish I spoke Latin, negotiatus, which means to carry on business. Okay, this is critical to understand because the goal of negotiating is to continue doing business by conferring with another to arrive at an agreement. So it's not about lowering the price to reach an agreement. It's a way to come to agreement on a proposal where you're focused on the value of your offer. Okay, so and so I sort of love this little definition because I think it sets it up in a nice way, where it's nothing to be afraid of, and you just, if you get your head in the right space, again, it's really just a productive conversation where you're representing yourself, no matter if you're negotiating with your 2 7-year-olds, I happen to know these 7 years old, one of them is an especially outstanding negotiator, or other things. And here's, just at the bottom, some of the times when you're probably negotiating, right? So closing a deal, job offer, comp, which we just discussed at length, promotion, raise, arbitration, court case, divorce, who knows, right? Lots of things. All right, and one more here. This, on the last panel, somebody had mentioned that women, it's generally known that women are not as, do not like negotiating as much as men. I think that there's plenty of data on that, but I think that we are all always negotiating with men. Every day in this line of work, we're more often negotiating with men than women. So I thought this slide was pretty interesting, just to think about like who are you up against, right? And how are women naturally wired versus how men are? And so these last 3 points, I think, on each side are most interesting about being assertive. We're not as assertive as men typically, right? They're more risk takers than we are. We're more focused on the value, which should play in our favor, right, when you're negotiating, and the men are really, more direct communicators and advocating for themselves. So a few interesting things there, and as a setup here, all right? So with those things in mind, I want to turn to some questions for the panel, and the first one is, So I'd just like to hear from all of you. What have you found to be the best strategies in negotiating? And why don't we start with negotiating at work, right? In kind of high stakes, you know, high stakes things. And what do you find to be the most difficult part of that? So Scotty, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So I think the most important strategy is figuring out what is the end result you want to achieve and then working backward from that. I think one of the pitfalls that I've seen over the course of my career is it's a dynamic where it's very easy to get caught up in, am I winning every single point? Am I getting into the minutiae? Am I, you know, and you may come out victorious on, you know, 9 out of 10 items, but if, let's say this is a negotiation, you know, with the CEO of a company that you're going to invest in, which is, you know, some of the most important negotiations that I would enter into, well, if I've done that, perhaps I feel like a winner because I checked off 9 of my 10 things on my issues list. But if the CEO now doesn't want to work with me and I have to sit in the boardroom and they have no interest in listening to what I have to say, like, did I really win? So I think being very clear upfront on, you know, what are your bottom lines? What are the most important things? How are you probability weighting, you know, each of the different items that are impactful? Having a practical view also on what are each of those things actually getting you. It can be very easy, especially in a legal documentation context, to be fighting tooth and nail over something that's like a 5% chance of happening. So knowing that end result and always really having a practical overlay to understanding why you're asking for this. If you find yourself in negotiation and 90% of your rationale is, well, that's precedent, well, that's precedent, well, that's precedent, I don't think you've done a good job of preparing. So I think those, to me, that's the most important part of the framework when I go into any negotiation and think about how I'm preparing.
Eileen, how about you?
I think about the nonverbal cues that you give in a negotiation, whether you're on a Zoom or a call or in person, and I think your voice is actually a tool and how you can disarm people with a calmer tone and a less assertive tone and putting sort of a smile into your conversation, right? Can just set a tone for the conversation to get to that win-win, sort of not get to the death by 1,000 paper cuts, right? Where you're wondering if you really won in the end. And I think we do a great job of preparing the material and understanding what we want to win, right? But I think you actually have to consciously think about your nonverbal body language and your voice as a tool in a communication, especially for negotiation.
And I mean, what are the hardest parts of negotiation?
Well, for me,
yeah,
as a marketer, because I'm a people pleaser by heart, I want everyone to love me, I'm a Sally Field complex, which is why I'm in this role, is shutting up. And like just letting that pregnant pause happen and letting the other person speak, and I'll be like, and that has taken some real practice on my part. That has taken some real coaching on my part. But it is, I have learned that the silence is really valuable, and to take that breath, even when you want to please the other side.
That's so true. And Shalini, can you maybe talk about some, you know, what's most successful for you, and also maybe give us an example of a really tough negotiation that you succeeded in?
Well, I would say the one thing about negotiation that I've found is very hard to do but is a necessary evil is being okay to walk away. And I feel a lot of times people invest, you know, it can be a deal, it can be buying a home, and you get so emotionally attached to this transaction or this item you're trying to purchase, and your emotions get the best of you. And you lose all judgment of what you're trying to accomplish. Going back to what Scotty says, what is the end goal? It becomes something where you're just trying to do everything and you just lose sight of the end goal. And you're like, at some point, you just need to pause, going back to what Eileen said, take a breather, listen to the room, but at the same time, be completely fine to walk away. A lot of times when you're willing to walk away, people are willing to come back to the table and say, okay, let's just lay out what went wrong, how we can figure out a resolution and try to fix it. You know, I'll use a great example, not necessarily at work, but has happened a lot of times. I was buying a home, and you know, with buying homes in the Bay or in the LA area, it's about how much you would pay for the highest price or what you're willing to have concessions with. And it was coming to a point where we were just at a heat where nobody was agreeing to anything. And I was saying, you know what? I love this home. I want to buy it, but I'm not willing to go down this path anymore, and I'm just walking away. I decided to just completely go pencils down, and I was driving out to the Bay Area. It was during COVID, and I was like, I'm done. I'm not going to look for a house. I'm taking a break. I can't deal with the real estate market in LA. And within 2 hours, the seller called me, and I was in escrow. And I got the house for $500,000 under asking. So sometimes just willing to step away will put you in such a pole position, and it feels like the worst thing to do because you've already invested time, you've invested energy, you've invested money, and you're like, it's okay, just walk away.
Great advice, great advice. So Scotty, when you're thinking about a win-win outcome, how, give us an example of a win-win outcome in your life, and tell us, how did you prepare for that win-win? What sort of role of preparation in a negotiation, and how should people think about it?
Sure. So, you know, I think a lot of it is communication, and it's not necessarily one example that stands out, but I would say literally anytime, again, the most sensitive and important negotiations in the specific seat that I sit in are usually figuring out what are the structure and terms on which I'm going to give a company money. What does that look like? And I find there is oddly sometimes this fear and hesitation about having a high degree of transparency with the management team and or whoever the shareholders are on the other side. People always feel like, oh, I got to keep my rationale really close to the vest and I can't give the explanation. And then, you know, there's this desire to be extremely opaque. I have not found that to be very effective. So a lot of what I'm doing when I'm preparing is just a lot of very open conversation. Hey, help me understand why X, Y, and Z is so important to you. Why is this coming up? How does what I'm asking you for impede your ability to grow your business, and therefore you're asking me to drop it? You know, how can we, is there something we can meet in the middle on? And oftentimes then I will surface that maybe there's something that happened to them at their last company, and they're like, I will never deal with that again. I will never, and it's like, oh, well, we could easily solve it this way instead and kind of duct tape this corner and then everything's fine, you know? And so much of it, again, is simple as it sounds, I'm just a huge fan of very, very open communication. And that includes, like, I need to be willing to show more, you know, of my cards, because I think, again, the walking away point is so important. It's like, look, if we can't get there and there's just not mutually agreeable terms for us to invest, then we shouldn't be partners anyway, you know? And I always take that approach. We're not adversaries. Like, of course, there's going to be moments of tension. There's going to be moments of friction. But I actually don't want to deal with if we can't get on the same page, you know, and a lot of it too, so that's a huge part of it, is just communication and transparency. And then a lot of it is a lot of time spent, and this is where I totally agree with understanding, you know, the elements of building trust that come from, you know, nonverbal signals, spending time with people in person, because also, you know, a lot of where negotiations can get heated and it can get hard to find that win-win is when you're in the very detailed minutiae of a legal document. Understanding that any deal I've ever done over the course of my career, if you are actually pulling out the legal contract that dictates it, something has gone very wrong. So I try to remind, you know, some of the partners too, is like, look, at the end of the day, these are so that we've got a really clear understanding of the guardrails of what is going to be like sort of no-no areas on a go-forward basis for the business. But otherwise, like, we're going to be making decisions collaboratively, and it's all about, do you trust that I'm going to be a constructive partner? And one of the ways I'm going to demonstrate to you that I'm going to be a constructive partner is exactly how I behave in each step of that transparent communication and the negotiation. So everybody has their own style, but to me, it's always, always high level of transparency throughout the entire process. I think you end up with a much better result, and nobody's surprised at the end.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, on the win-win, maybe talk about how you've gotten to a win-win and talk about some of the reasons why you need a win-win.
Sure. I'm going to talk about internal win-win and resources, sitting in business development, marketing, city, and I've learned over my career that I need to shout out the value proposition of myself and my team throughout the year, and not just in that one comp discussion. So when I show up at our weekly senior management meeting, I always share something new about the market, whatever our update on our fundraise is, and then a brag moment. A moment either about someone on my team who's come up with competitive information for the product we're launching, or something that our team did. It's not always like, oh, we won this mandate. But literally laying the groundwork every week for the value proposition for our team. So when we sit down at year end and you're having a discussion about how to cut up the pie, it's less heated. I don't have to try to cram in and remember everything we did throughout the entire year. The table has been set. Now, it's taken me a long time to learn that, but I think that is a win-win because it is less heated discussion now, and I keep and retain the great talent that I enjoy on my team that way.
I love that, Eileen, and I love the idea that negotiation sometimes feels like it's at a point in time.
Yeah.
But a lot of life is negotiated over a long period of time, right? And in this space, it's like a small world. Everybody knows everybody, and you know, it's the long game. So
yeah.
I mean, that's great, and I love thinking about the internal communications, and you know, as professional women here, you know, it's on us to help our teams shine and get to the next place. And so I love, Eileen, that you're so intentional about that. Yeah, Shalini, what about you?
And again, I think everybody kind of touched on it, but you know, just always being okay to concede on some points. You don't always have to win on every point. We all want to get to setting that objective. What is the win-win at the end of the day? And being okay, giving up on some points. Is it coming up with kind of going into the negotiation, listing out what are the pain points and what things that it's a nice to have, but it's not a must have. I think going into a negotiation, having that in your back pocket always sets you up, I think, for success. And it's not something where, as kind of Scotty was saying, you don't want to walk out at the end of the day and everybody hating each other even though the deal got done. And that sometimes does happen because you just get the best of things. And so I think being, one, transparent, you know, being okay with conceding on some items, and then again, just knowing that it's not a one point in time, it's like a long negotiation at the table, after it, you know, before. So, and also building relationship with the people around you, I think just makes the whole conversation easier as well. And I think we're going to go touch on this point when something becomes contentious, like how then do you deal with the situation as well?
That's a great point, Shalini, on all that. And I think the key point that you have to live with the people after it's done, you know, it's, you never do one deal in this life and never run into the people again, right? So I've been around long enough to know that. So you want to make sure that you get what you need. And on the point of preparation, I have to remind myself of this all the time, right? Because we're all so busy, right? Racing around from one thing to another. But intentional preparation for potentially challenging or high stakes conversations is so critical, right? So I don't care whether you're, you know, navigating a media interview or you're negotiating with a jerk reporter that, you know, wants to get a story and you want to tell your story, or if you're in a high-stakes new business deal, negotiating with your boss. I think the discipline of kind of sitting down ahead of time, you know, somewhere quiet for a half an hour and writing down your points and thinking through what's going to come up, who am I negotiating with? Put your feet in their shoes and think about what are they going to say to you, right? Because you're often going into a negotiation thinking about yourself. And to be honest, part of it's about yourself and what you want, but the more important part is who are these people across the table from you, and what do they want, and what kinds of things are they going to ask, and what are they going to object to? And so I always say to our team, you know, put before you have any conversation with your clients, let's put our feet in their shoes, right, and assume their point of view. So those are, I think, are some kind of important learnings, and no one's ever great at it. You have to really remind yourself to be disciplined because we are so overworked and everything today, right? With the 24/7, and people feel like they've got so much going on, so it's hard to find that quiet time. So Shalini, back, well, why don't we go the other way, the other direction here? So we talked about, you set the stage there for the overheated conversation. So when we're in a tough negotiation and it's not going well, love to know kind of tips for bringing it back to center or how you manage that, and also when you walk away, okay? Because I heard a lot of you saying, you know, there are times when you just have to say, like, that's it, and how do you do that nicely? And so the next time you see the person out of the restaurant, it's not terrible, right?
So I think you made a great point, Moira. I think always putting yourself in your opponent's shoes and taking a pause, breathe. When things become heated, it's not about personal attacks. It's not about what I want, what you're not giving me. It's like literally you just need to wait and pause and think about why they're reacting the way you are. They're reacting. And I personally always find sometimes when you are in a negotiation, sometimes you have very much a tunnel vision on how you're achieving that goal. And sometimes I think the best way to try to get people back to the table is maybe you need to reframe the discussion. Maybe go at it in a different way. Look at it in a different point of view. Maybe that way they can see where you're coming from so that you're not just, you know, like a bull in a china store. You're just going straight at it and you're just not making any traction. So I feel like when you're in a heated discussion, maybe start thinking of ways they can start looking at different angles of the points that we're trying to get to the table. And again, it's never a personal attack. I feel like everybody just needs to sometimes also a potential other option that I usually think, let's all take a break, let's go get coffee, let's get a bite to eat, maybe we're all hangry and we just need food. And then we can discuss it a little better. There's so many ways I think you can manage a heated negotiation. And sometimes again, it's just more time versus having like, you know, running to the finish line when you're not gonna get the goal or the outcome you want.
Great, Eileen.
Almost showing me that. The taking a break is always key, and that's usually my one go-to. But I'm gonna go back to the voice. And when someone on the other side of the table is obviously exercised, upset, and they're starting to raise the volume, right? It's hard to avoid sort of trying to match that, right? I call it use the late night FMS. Slow it down, right? Like that woman, you know, when you drive late in a rental car, you get that woman who on the radio who's like doing the love songs, right? It's that moment. You want to be that moment, right? Where you lean in and go. So we hear you saying this. How am I supposed to get to X? Let's talk about some ways we can work together. Literally, slow it down. So instead of matching and getting into the race of the, right, that energetic frenzy that's coming at you, like just put the brakes on it. If you can't like step out and get a coffee, which would be my first, right, or hangry.
Totally agree.
And everything. I use the late night FM voice.
I love it.
Scotty, what about you? And tell us when you walked away and how you do that nicely.
Well, I'll give, so I would say the general theme, and I think you guys both touched on this thematically, but I think my experience is when it gets very, very heated, oftentimes everybody has forgotten the humanity of the situation. They have forgotten that there are human beings. I am a human being who is imperfect. They are human beings who are imperfect. We probably each have our own versions of the truth that seem extremely correct, and the truth is probably somewhere in between. And when people are only communicating on email or Zoom or other formats, it's really easy to dehumanize, and that makes it very hard to resolve an issue. So I think, you know, some of what they touched on there, and sometimes it does involve just a pause and a context switch. You know, there was a really tough negotiation I was having, and, you know, everybody's screaming. I'm screaming, thank you very much. But like, you know, I've been screaming, name calling, all this kind of stuff. And I was just like, time out. I'm taking you to breakfast. And I was like, will you please just come sit with me at a diner for an hour? bring the term sheet on a piece of paper and let's have a conversation. And then one of the other things, you know, I think in terms of bringing the humanity back that I think is an important tool is, like, I know I'm not always right, especially if something's gotten heated, and maybe I need to have the humility to go first, to break the ice and help the other person come back down to a more humane level. So, like, that particular breakfast that I'm thinking of, I started by being like, you know what? I'm sorry. Yesterday got a little bit heated. I think we're actually really close. I really liked you, blah, 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 blah. And just own it first, and it totally just brings the other person back down to be like, okay, we're just two people, we're eating eggs, it's gonna be okay. Like, we're gonna survive this. And so just really remembering it's two human beings with sensitive egos who wanna win and they're just scared. Usually there's just so much fear going on every side of the table when a negotiation's gone really wrong, and just don't forget that. You know, there's a great HBR article that talks about the building blocks of trust basically being authenticity, logic, and empathy. And what you're hearing, I think, in all of these examples is the power of empathy and empathetic listening and some amount of humility in your approach. So, you know, when I've had to really walk away, you know, from certain situations, you know, it's actually fortunately been extremely rare, you know, in my career, and actually all of the experiences that I can think of more fall in the camp of, like, I walked away for a minute and then it resolved itself.
A sign of an effective negotiator. I like that.
And I will say the one example that comes up in my head where I had a really intense one of those, there was a situation where somebody was asking me to agree to something that I felt would compromise my personal principles, and that is a hard line that I will not do. That is not something I ever want to be attached to my professional reputation. So to me, when something starts to get in the territory of I feel like I have to compromise my own character, I'm not gonna do that. And there was a situation where I felt like something I was being asked to do did that, and I walked away, and then people came right back to the table and said, forget it, we're sorry, that's gone.
And I think, Scotty, just the one point you brought up that I really want people to know, saying sorry doesn't mean weakness. And I think sometimes a lot of people are like, oh my God, you don't want to apologize. You can't use words of weakness. You can't say you're sorry. You can't say I'm wrong. But that actually, I feel, sometimes is a tool because it just gets people back to what the goal is at the end of the day, and it's not a sign of weakness. It's still a way of moving forward.
I think that's a great point and brings us right to our question. I can tell Scotty's one of these people that reads a lot of the same things I read, the HBR articles, that we're always scouring around for, you know, great articles, and there are so many good ones in that publication. But Scotty had mentioned when we were talking about this article that she had read an Adam Grant story, all right? And I don't know if you all follow Adam Grant, but, you know, he was the guy that he had a book, an article called Corner Office for Someone, which I used to read religiously every Saturday or Sunday or whenever it was in the New York Times, right? And then he wrote a book on that, and now he's got it mostly online doing all the stuff. But he's an amazing leadership person, and for the last panel on this one, somebody everybody should follow. But in this article, he wrote an article that says, women know exactly what they're doing when they use weak language, okay? And weak language is language like, I might be wrong, but, or don't you think, okay? Or I'm hopeful that, okay? And what he's saying is that this kind of tentative talk, if you will, is actually a strategic advantage that women can use in communicating. So Shalini, that was sort of following on with what you were just saying. There's, you know, and on the whole empathy thing. So Scotty, since you came up with the article, tell us a little bit about that and what you think.
Sure. Look, I think that, and the article has very controversial language, but it's interesting we were talking about this. I'm like, I think he used a catchy, like, weak language feels a little aggressive. But thematically, when I read it, I do think what's very relevant, and you've heard it in a number of these answers, is you have to understand the impact that you as an individual human being bring in the context of a negotiation. And you are going to be experienced different if you come in the form of a female body, like, and a female voice. Like, it just, every piece of research will show you that. So I think it's important, what I agree with the article is, I think you have to have an understanding, if you're going to be successful in this business, the impact that that has, and have a level of tact and social awareness and communication awareness that you're going to be able to be heard, which includes some of this, which ties generally into the idea of this like warmth competence divide. It's a thing that we have to navigate very precisely and differently than our male counterparts, because we need to be perceived as likable in order to be effective. We also need to be perceived as highly competent and are not going to be given the benefit of the doubt on either one of those measures as often as our counterparts. And look, the way I've approached it over the course of my career is like, I could get really mad and let that derail me and just bail out of this career entirely, or I can have a level of awareness of the reality of the situations, work myself into a senior seat, and then try to make more change when I'm there. And that's generally what I've done, and it's meant I've had to bite my tongue many times. And I'm glad I did, you know, because I have the opportunity now to have a different kind of impact than I could, you know, when I was younger. So you just have to be socially aware, and there's a different nuance to that when you're coming to the negotiating table as a woman.
Any other comments, Eileen, Shalini, on that point?
When I read the article, you know, as Scotty was saying, we were like, I don't understand why he used that word weakness. I honestly think it's a method of, you're hedging. You're hedging the discussion. You're trying to bring sort of, I would say, soften the request, like asking for a pay raise, asking for a promotion. By using some of these more, I would say, subtle, you know, weakness words, I feel as you're just hedging yourself to kind of read the room to see how are they taking your requests. How are they getting defensive? Are they open to hearing out why you need to get a promotion or a raise or whatever the context can be? I do think that we bring to bear that, and it brings, again, going back to Scotty's point, humility to a conversation, reading the room, not being someone who's just throwing out. You want to be assertive. I'm not saying don't be assertive, but you can do it in a really more subtle way. And I think that just makes the whole discussion palatable. You walk away feeling like, okay, I've kind of put my case forward. Always come prepared. Always bring points, facts to the table. Don't just bring it about, I deserve to get promoted, but why? Bring why you need to get promoted. Bring key facts on why you need pay raise. Bring kind of comps in the market. Whenever you have facts, it's hard for them to say, oh, you're making an unreasonable request.
Shalini, one thing on that point too. I think it's important to know, to make sure you're negotiating with the right person on all the points. Sometimes we get stuck on a contract term, and we're talking to the lawyer, and then we say, well, okay, how about we get the person who's actually going to be working with us on the horn, right? And that person says, we're totally happy to live with that risk. Get this contract signed, right? So you need to know that everybody's got some skin in the game, and sometimes you're talking to the wrong person, right?
I agree.
Eileen, any thoughts on that?
All I can say is I've tried it both ways. I've tried to be that assertive, right, go in, bulldog, and men just experience you differently. It's just a fact. And it didn't work.
Yep.
It didn't work. And what works for me is to be authentic and to be collaborative and have your data and your homework done.
Right.
And I usually get what I want. But if I walk in like some of my male counterparts with the same strategy, it just doesn't work. It hasn't worked for me. And it's a shame that that's the way it is, but it just is.
So do we have any questions from the audience? I've got a couple more, but great.
Just sort of a quick one. So I studied computer science, so naturally my favorite class in college was negotiation. That makes a lot of sense. And one of the things that talked about in one of the exercises we did that was most helpful to me personally and professionally was listing out our strengths and weaknesses as a negotiator, very honestly, to say, you know, when I show up as my authentic self, which Ben just talked about, you know, where are my weak spots and where are my strengths, and then figuring out how to lean into those. So I'm a people pleaser from the perspective of, I really like everyone to be happy, right? Like, I want everyone to be happy, I don't want anybody to be upset with me. And learning how to lean into that from the perspective of, I'm going to do a lot of research, I'm going to understand what the other side wants, where their best alternative to a negotiated agreement is, you know, where they're calling an anchor, all of that, so that I'm leaving hopefully with a win-win. And I'm just curious if you have done something similar.
opportunities?
I'm not even answer. I mean, look, I think you've heard the theme of authenticity generally across the board. And so I totally agree with you that everyone negotiates a little bit differently. And I think if you're trying to comport yourself into something that you're not, that just requires so much energy, like, that then you're not going to have for all of the important things, like remembering all of your data and everything else. So I think don't be afraid to utilize whatever is natural for you, because in some people are, you know, extreme bulldozers and don't care about the other person's feelings. Like, that could be really effective. I've seen people do it. I'm like, oh my God, I could never do that. If I tried to execute that, it would be horrible because it's completely inauthentic to who I am. You know, and again, going back to this humanity point, people can feel that, you know, on the other side of the table. So, you know, I haven't necessarily done, well, I would say I've done a zillion different types of exercises exactly like that, because I do think getting to know yourself and understanding like what your strengths are is incredibly important for every part of your professional career, whether that's through school, executive coaching, therapy, whatever resource it is that you choose. Like knowing yourself is vital, I think, to long-term success in every area, including negotiation. So, you know, and not trying to imitate somebody else who has a style totally different than me, I think has been very important. But it's scary, because like you think, you look and you're like, oh my God, I got a mirror exactly, like, oftentimes, that man. And it's like, well, I can't. That's not who I am. But it doesn't mean I can be effective.
I love that you took this class in school. And I
think everyone should take it.
Well,
it's so important.
There's so little hands-on training, right? You get into the workplace and it's like, have at it. So on that point, I'd love to know, how did you three, you know, learn to negotiate? Did you have a mentor? And what resources would you provide our audience on how to get smarter on negotiating? What are your favorite things to read or to?
Well, for me personally, I think it was mainly through, I would say, mentorship. I worked under this one senior banker when I was a banker in my past life, and he was a strong negotiator. And I was, you know, when I first started banking, I was an analyst, and I used to just be on calls, all this negotiating of term sheets and credit agreements. I'll just be quiet on the phone. And he'd be like, Shanley, as quiet as a church mouse. Like, I wouldn't say a word because I'm just listening. I'm just paying attention. I'm just seeing how we're getting to the finish line. And I finally found my voice a couple of years later. And then he was like, wow, you can't just shut up now. You just keep going. And I'm like, well, I found my voice. And again, everybody finds different resources. But what I also think that we all don't realize is I think someone brought up this point, we're negotiating at every point in your life, from waking up in the morning to, like, you know, getting into the office. You know, you're always negotiating, and you're doing it unconsciously. And so I think what the key takeaway I would say is, don't get discouraged if you lose a negotiation. Always take a step back, take learnings or key takeaways from that negotiation, and see how you can do better. I think going back to your question earlier about how you took that class and finding out your weakness and your strengths, you're always going to have weakness and strength in every different negotiation. Never you're going to have the same weakness and strength in every negotiation. And so I think you should always think about it, do a lot of takeaways from it and learn from it. And again, of course, reading all the different articles and books out there. There's a ton of resources, but sometimes you just need to take an inward perspective of things too.
So guys, I see our time is up. Time is up for the negotiators here. So is there any final question?
I just have one quick one.
Okay.
I'm wondering if any of you, at any point in your career, specifically earlier, because now you're all very successful, but while you were trying to climb the ranks and become a successful leader in the industry, if you ever had to overcome, like, prior perceptions of yourself, like the humanity we talked about, people who feel that across the table, the humanity from your prior role or who you were in your prior role, if that had ever held you back or you ran into that circumstance?
I haven't necessarily. I mean, I think the only way, like, the answer that comes to mind to me in response to that question is, I think I have had more comfort being more myself, and I'm more aware of who that is the older that I get and the longer that I work. So, you know, I think it's not necessarily that it was a before or after perception. I think I've my fundamental values and character have generally been the same, but I let them be a little bit louder at this phase. And I'm less apologetic about that.
Okay, well, with that, we'll be around if anybody has any more questions, but I'd like to thank With Intelligence, this amazing audience we have here, and our outstanding panelists for a great conversation today. Thank you, everybody.